Hey, Dylan Kelly here, host of the Wave Break podcast. Excited to get into this episode, but first, here's a quick word from our sponsor. This episode of the Wave Break podcast is brought to you by Klaviyo, the growth marketing platform most recommended by other business leaders. Listen, in uncertain times, you need to be supporting your community and growing relationships with your customers. It's going to be appreciated. It's going to be remembered. It's going to be shared. And in good times and bad, this type of communication that's open and empathetic with your customers is key. This is a key theme that we've been talking about at Wavebreak. I've been preaching this on the podcast. And when you're communicating with your customers in this way, the best way to do this is with email. It is and always will be one of the best channels for delivering communication like this. And what I love about Klaviyo is that email is one of its core offerings. And their personalization that you can do inside Klaviyo is just, it can't be beat. And when you leverage that personalization driven by a 360-degree view of the customer, these emails are going to feel more relevant and they're going to drive even stronger relationships. And Klaviyo gets it. They're not just, you know, some company. They understand how challenging it is right now for every entrepreneur. You know, it was hard to get your business off the ground, and navigating these times is even harder. And if you're feeling overwhelmed with growing your business, know that you're not alone. Klaviyo is here to help you build relationships across any distance for your brand and create memorable and meaningful email marketing moments that last a lifetime. And that's how you build a successful e-commerce brand. And this is why I love Klaviyo so much, because they're on the same page with me and Wavebreak. Is like, we're not just about making more revenue. That's great. But what this is really about is an opportunity to create an amazing community with your customers. And the best way to do it is with email. And if you're not on Klaviyo, you gotta get on Klaviyo. Visit klaviyo.com to schedule a free trial. That's Klaviyo.com. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Wavebreak podcast. I'm your host, Dylan Kelly, founder and CEO of Wavebreak. If you're new here, Wavebreak is a boutique agency specializing exclusively in email and SMS marketing for direct-to-consumer e-commerce brands. This podcast is sponsored by Klaviyo. Shout out to Klaviyo for sponsoring it. Obviously, we're huge fans. We use Klaviyo with our clients every single day. You know, if email is not a top channel in your business, you should reach out to us. You can do so at wavebreak.co. We have an extremely limited client roster, and the closer and closer we get to Black Friday, the more and more closer to capacity we get. And by the time you're listening to this, we might actually be booked solid out. So hit us up if you are interested in learning more about how we can help you turn email and SMS into huge channels for your business that you can rely on as ads get more expensive into Q4 and things become unpredictable. Email and SMS are going to stay predictable, but you need to do it right, and you're going to have to stand out in inboxes that are more crowded than ever. The best way to do that is to partner with a company who has done that before and driven millions and millions of dollars in email revenue every single month this year, and will continue to do so throughout the year. And that partner is Wavebreak. So if you want to learn more about Wavebreak, go to wavebreak.com. You can schedule a call at wavebreak.co/call. We're looking forward to hearing from you. So anyway, really excited for this episode. I feel like I say that every episode, but generally excited. Like, if you're new to this podcast, the Wavebreak podcast is for people who start brands, run marketing for brands, and want to take things to the next level and really like pour gas in the fire and build the next $100 million company and beyond, in the direct consumer e-commerce space. And one of the guys who's doing this really well is a guy named Steven Borelli, founder and CEO of a company called Cuts Clothing. If you haven't heard of Cuts, and you're a dude and you're listening to this podcast, you gotta check out Cuts. They sell amazing clothing by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. It's so, like, just check it out, cutsclothing.com. We're gonna link it up down in the show notes below. But this is a really great episode. So Steven started Cuts. He'll get into his story in a little bit, but he started Cuts a while ago. He started Cuts, I think, back in 2016. I forget. He tells us in the interview. They've scaled super fast. They've sold millions of shirts. You know, they're well into the eight figures. And that's something that's super fascinating, is they're doing it selling shirts. And not only do we talk about like branding, because that's something Steven's really nailed at Cuts, is like how to build a brand to sell a premium product. He's super good at that, super talented marketer. And we also dive into behind the scenes. So like, how are they able to scale so fast? What did that look like from a finance perspective? How do they fund that? They have this solid brand, but they also have a big team, a lot of agency partners they work with. How do they make sure everything's on point, everything's on brand? He talks about their guiding principles and all these different things, including the meeting cadence, how he finds and hires great team members, including his something he calls his like gas rating, which is super exciting. Like when you learn the gas rating thing, it's genius. As well as his plans for Q4 and you know when all the sales are starting and how he's thinking about it, how he's prepping inventory and, you know, future products to come from Cuts Clothing and a ton of other ideas along the way. One of my favorite episodes I've done of the podcast. So really good one. So without further ado, let's hop right in. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Steven.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. It's I'm a fan of your guys's as well. And yeah, let's get into it. Pumped to share our story.
Yeah, let's do it. So, I mean, we started our businesses at similar times, but you just want to give a quick overview of like, you know, first things first, what's Cuts? And then second, like, what's your story? How'd you get into this?
Yeah. So first off, Cuts is a men's clothing brand that was founded in 2016 off of a Kickstarter campaign. And we've, for the first 4 years of the business, focused on doing one thing great, and that is to create the only shirt worth wearing. You know, like I mentioned offline before, Cuts was founded on the vision of there was really a gap in the market of a lack of a professional shirt that you could wear to work and on a date that felt like an athletic shirt, but didn't appear and look like a, you know, like a Lululemon or a Nike athletic shirt that really could move with you, and fabrication that accomplished that minimalist style, but comfortable where you really just wanted to live in it. And it was, you know, at the time there still was a million different t-shirt brands, but there wasn't one that was online. I remember when I first started the brand, there was tons of different, you know, naysayers that said shopping online would be too hard. You know, you got to do a one size fits all type brand, and dealing with reverse logistics of that's going to be a nightmare. And I, you know, and we just went for it, and you know, we've scaled to 8 figures in 3.5 years, and it's been we have 17 people on the team, and it's been a fun ride, and you know, we're just getting started.
That's awesome. And what did you do before? Like, do you have a background in launching brands like this? Did you come from retail? Did you come from, you know, do you have a fashion background? Like, is this a natural progression, or what does your story look like before that?
Yeah. So, before Cuts, kind of a little backstory on how the business was founded. And it kind of talks about my, history was I was working at an advertising agency in San Diego, and all the guys at work were wearing, you know, it became a hot topic of what shirts you were wearing. Cause we, you know, you had to look good, but it also wasn't like the most formal attire. Some guys wore dress shirts, but most guys wore t-shirts and nice jeans and dress shoes. It became a hot topic of what you were wearing to work. And some guys wore, you know, Lululemon shirts. And then some guys wore this, and it was just hard to find like you could find one-offs, but it was hard to find like 10 shirts that you could just live in. You know, from that day on, I was like, you know what? I think there's something here. I think there's something that, you know, I could do. During that time, I also, you know, it was kind of when the one size fits all type brands like Pura Vida, Movement Watches, you know, Diff Eyewear were getting going. You know, it really inspired me at the time to start an e-commerce brand. And I really always wanted to be a founder. So then at that period, I said, you know what, I'm moving home. I'm moving home. We're going to start this t-shirt brand. And I started working for my dad's business, which the hours were like, you know, so I moved from San Diego to Washington State. And then at that period, I, you know, worked from 6 a.m. to noon I sold the produce, like physical apples from Washington State to New York, like big truckloads of apples. And then, but really all my time was during like 2 years was focused on 2015 and 2016, just focused on learning the business. I got my PhD and just, you know, in hustling and learning things on the go. It took me a full year to get the Kickstarter up. And that was from 2015 to 16. And then 2016, I launched on Kickstarter. We did 40,000 in sales, and that 40,000 didn't even really get us, you know, our full PO. It seemed like a lot of money at the time, but I realized it really wasn't much. So then we, you know, we launched, and then, you know, fast forward 3 years, we've sold millions of shirts, and it's been a fun ride.
That's awesome. I love the story of like literally selling apples. Like, that's great. Like it doesn't get any better than that.
There was a lot of similarities though, because you know, when you sell apples, you deal with the production lines. And one thing when I was selling apples, it really made me believe in doing shirts as a business, because apples is a diminishing good. So every week you need an apple. Clothing isn't as high as diminishing good as an apple is, a t-shirt isn't. But there is an element of, you know, you want a new shirt every so often. And, you know, if you look at anything out of all the items in your closet, you're going to have the most shirts. The average, you know, consumer has 14 shirts that are in rotation that they always wear, which is, you know, which is a great opportunity. Plus, of those 14, studies have shown that around 5 to 7 of them are new within that year. So the average consumer is going to buy 5 to 7 shirts and then keep them in the rotation. You know, there's a lot of opportunity there for brands. So, you know, it did, there was a lot of similarities in random ways of selling apples and selling t-shirts.
Yeah, that's awesome. And like, what did it look like? So you started this business, it took you a while to get up to speed to launch the Kickstarter, but now, I mean, you've scaled to like millions of shirts. Like, how did you go from, I mean, like you've ramped really quickly since then. So how did you go from, you know, slowly launching this Kickstarter then to like scaling as fast as you did?
I would say, you know, there's two areas I probably want to talk about is one, like the team building, and two, like the exterior marketing. And from a team building perspective, you know, after the Kickstarter, I realized like I was great at like understanding consumers and what they wanted. And I knew how to like sell things online. I had, you know, decent experience with Facebook ads at that period in time. But I didn't really know like production management and scalability and how to scale things. And so, or accounting, like, you know, when we first started, we were buying the fabric from Taiwan and having to deal with like all the trimmings. And like, you know, you wouldn't think about it, but when you buy fabric that's a tri-blend like ours, you have to buy the source fabric. So you got to buy the cotton, the polyester, the spandex. You got to, you know, understand the water that it's washed in, because if it's the wrong water, it's going to come out like two different pieces of fabric. So there's a lot that goes into it, and you really need operational excellence. So at that period, I teamed up with a CPA who, his name was Carter Shea. He was the first team member, and he really just got our books and he made sure we weren't losing money. And then Sean Chrisman, who worked at Boeing and was in operations and just really dialed in our operational excellence, and then allowed me to excel in the things I was good at. So we had a pretty dynamic team for the first, you know, several months. And then right after, you know, I would say about 8 months in, we brought on Brennan, who helped me with the marketing and photos and all that. So for the first 3 years, it was really just, first 2 years, it was really just four guys in four different cities grinding our asses off at night while we all worked full-time jobs. I mean, we did like, you know, $6 to $7 million in sales one of those years. And we didn't take a penny, didn't pay ourselves a penny and put all that money back into the business. We didn't, you know, we haven't raised outside capital. So to kind of answer that question, I think just getting the right team members and that all did something completely different, you know, and that really allowed us to maximize our efforts when we really didn't have resources to hire anyone else. So that was the first thing. And then the consumer marketing side, I think we focused on one, making great products, and two, doing one thing great. We, you know, like you mentioned, you know, before we jumped on the podcast, was it's hard enough to do one thing great. So just focus on that. And we've really focused on truly making great products and not doing too much and trying to be the best shirts worth, the best shirts in the world. And our slogan is, you know, created, you know, cuts are the only shirt worth wearing for men trying to accomplish the sport of business. So that's kind of our quick little tagline there.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, it's so funny. Like, I ask this question all the time on the podcast, like, how did you go so fast? And it's like the same answer over and over again. Like, basically, it comes down to like, you can't build something big alone. And you can only build something as strong as the team you're building too, which is like really important as a founder and CEO, which I think, like, you know, you reflect perfectly. The other guests I've had on the show, it's the exact same thing. Like, diving into the marketing side quick, like going a little deeper on that, like, I think it's really fascinating. Like, you touched on this a little bit at the end there with like your tagline and slogan. But like, what's crazy about cuts is, and you kind of touched on this also in the beginning, but like at the end of the day, it's a t-shirt, and you can buy like a t-shirt for like, you know, $1, or there's t-shirts that cost $1,000. And you're kind of like, you know, what people would consider at the higher end. But you also have people who are happily paying that. I think part of it goes to the product, but something you also do really well, like better than a lot of other people, is like brand. Like, you seem to really understand brand and how to communicate it. Like, I mean, in a way where it's like, it has to be intentional. So what, how do you think about brand and like, how have you integrated that into your marketing, into your product, and just into the business in general?
Yeah, that's a great, that's so true. Like, brand for us is really at the core of what we do. You know, you can have great fabrics, but if the brand was like weird, people probably wouldn't buy it, even if it probably was a comfortable fabric. In addition to having just great products, which is part of building a great brand, you know, you have to be organic with the people that you relate to and who you align yourself with. And, you know, we've done, you know, at first when we didn't have money, we focused on brand, on how we could do. We just gave people our shirts and we didn't ask for anything in return. And it started small with, you know, one athlete here and there from that one of our friends knew that could connect us with, like, friend of a friend. And then he liked the shirts, and then it kind of spread through MLB, NFL, and NHL locker rooms, just through like the most random connections ever. You know, we just built relationships. I think brand is gets really overcomplicated when it's just building relationships that people that align with your brand and that can, you know, that there's similarities with. And so some examples of that we've done is, coming up, we have this really cool brand partnership with the shoe surgeon and Clint Frazier on the Yankees. And, you know, that's one example of just me and Clint have been friends over the course of the last 3 years. And then we made him a shoe and he's going to wear it on the field. And it's going to be cool for our fans to see that, you know, we're finding a way to, you know, have our shoes on a New York Yankee on a game in Fenway tomorrow. So, you know, that's just an aspect of brand from a, you know, athlete partnership standpoint. We've also done brand stuff just with who we are. You know, sometimes you don't have money to do big brand plays with athletes, but, you know, Cuts was four guys that were truly entrepreneurs. And, you know, I like what you said the other day, Dylan, when you said, you know, we're the unofficial shirt of the entrepreneur, and it plays in line with the sport of business. And, you know, we just had a 4-year anniversary video. And I think just telling people our story is so part of our brand, and it relates, you know, a lot of our competitors, and it's, you know, you can't name the founder of the brand. And I think if you can't name the founder of the brand, they're not a brand. You know, the founder has to embody what they represent to make it feel tangible. You know, if you're just a product brand, you're going to be if you don't have that core brand, you're just going to be another product. So being organic with our approach of just showing our story can really influence the brand image.
Yeah, and that's huge, and it's going to be even more important like over the next decade, because I mean, you know, even over the last 5 years, like, anyone can start an online store, right, with Shopify. And, you know, now that retail's closed, a lot of retailers are coming into Facebook, they're coming into Instagram, they're coming into YouTube, they're coming into Google, these ad platforms. And we've seen the effects of that, you know, the cost going up and down, you know, based on these trends over the last 4 years too. And if you're just selling a product, like, you're not going to be able to get away with the marketing, because, you know, you're just selling a t-shirt, the ads aren't going to be profitable. But if you build a brand, I mean, that's really when the magic starts to happen. So I think what I love about Cuts is it's like, you've already been building a brand. So, you know, I'm really confident that you guys are going to be around for a very long time, because so many other companies that are hurting right now, they don't have a brand. They've just been selling products this whole time instead of like really selling like a vision and like what it feels like. And that's something that I think you do really well. Like, do you have this like written down, like what you stand for, or like, how do you get everyone aligned? Because now, you know, you're like 15, 20 people. How do you make sure everyone's still on the same page, like with your vision, with what the brand's about?
That's a great question. First off, we have a internal document that we call our guiding principles, and there are 15 principles that represent who we are internally as a business. And some of them, they're just 15 key phrases that we represent. One of them is, you know, we're always on, and always on is literally and figuratively. One, we're always wearing Cuts, everything we do. And two, we're men that are always ready to go in any scenario. That represent Cuts, whether it's at a bar or at work or on a date, we're always on. You know, you hear people say like, dude, that guy's always on. That's our goal for our mission and who, and truly who we are. And then, you know, from some more of the tangible ways we, you know, tell, like, we're on, you know, 50, 60 podcasts, we're on you know, we've done TV spots, you know, millions of dollars in advertising on Facebook. And we do have core guidelines that we make the agencies follow, from like text to imagery to the type of model that people use. So it's, you know, building a brand is not an overnight thing. It also takes time to understand who you are. When I first started the brand, I got done with the Kickstarter page. I'm like, that's not what was in my head. And I was like, huh, this is actually harder than I thought. Because a lot of times when you're starting a brand, you can have the vision in your head, but then when it actually gets on paper, that's not what it looks like. You know, you realize when you go to start something of all the little things that take place to build a brand, like consistent fonts, consistent models, the jean size, the shoes they wear, the background, is it white, is it gray? Like all of that has to do with like building a great brand, and it takes practice and it takes dedication and it takes month doing a million little things right to have a great brand. So, and we've gotten better at it over the years, and it's not something that can happen overnight. It really just takes time. And that's why I think we've had been fortunate not to have, you know, money, and, you know, people invest in our business. We've had very little investment money. And I think because of that, we've had to do the small things right, because we didn't have money to blow on, you know, maybe things that weren't as important.
Yeah, for sure. And it's something too, like, how do you keep up with that and keep this, like, because like, I mean, you grew so fast. So I'm just trying to think, like, there's a lot of logistics going on. How do you also build and grow and like, I guess like solidify and like fine tune and, you know, get this stuff down on paper? Cause like, I'm sure there was times when you're probably, you know, writing out those principles when you probably didn't feel like you had enough time in the day to even get to it, but you knew it was important. Or, I mean, like what did that look like? Cause I know so many people are like so busy. It's like, there's not enough time, especially with Q4 coming. Like, I don't have time, but all this stuff is living in so many people's heads as founders and CEOs and, you know, even just like marketing leaders in their brand. Like, how did you find time to get all this stuff documented?
It took hustle and, you know, reaching out to other founders that I admired and be like, hey, you know, I think one example of us doing it a bad job when it was the four of us, it was really easy to understand what the brand was because we were talking every day and we were understanding, you know, it was just easy to understand who we were. But when you added like that second and third layer of staff, you know, they didn't have the prior years and the million conversations. So we, you know, we had to get something written on the wall, and the guiding principles in our brand Bible were something so huge. And it's something that takes work every single day. You know, we start our Tuesday meetings with who we are as a business. And we just go over the basics. You know, you hear Nike, they still do that. And, you know, you would think Nike, everyone knows what Nike is the second they, you know, get in the building. But even then, they're constantly reminding everyone that works for them, who they are, what they represent, how they go about their business, and then the tangible ways they execute it. So, you know, it's not something that can ever be forgotten and ever stopped. It's something that you do every day.
Yeah, I love that. And you keep building on it. I mean, that's a challenge that a lot of brands have. Like, you have that first core founding team, everybody knows the brand, but as you know, get past 10 people, that's when everything, it's like, it starts to, you know, get diluted. And just the fact that you have like, yeah, would you say like a brand Bible and then also this principles doc?
Guiding principles, yeah.
Guiding principles. Like
consumer facing, where we send it to people.
And okay.
Guiding principles is internal for like how we conduct business in the office.
Oh, nice. Awesome. And like in the guiding principles, is this like, hey, here's how we message on Slack? Or is it more like high level, like here's what we believe and operate as a business?
It's a little bit of, it's not as tangible as this is Slack. It's more like,
right.
Let me give you a few. It's like, you know, our first guiding principle is customer is always first. So in everything we do, the customer is always first. Another one that I love, this is our number five, is, you know, it's called rocks. And it's a parable based on understanding how we go about our work. You know, the example of why rocks are important, focusing on your rocks of your business, and everyone, each department needs to know their rocks, is, you know, when you fill up a cup, if you were to fill it up with, and you had rocks and sand, if you were to fill up the cup with sand first and then the rocks, you wouldn't be able to get the most important things done in your day, which represent the rocks, versus if you put the rocks in the cup, then you put the sand, you can fill up the sand and the rocks. So it's just a literal example of making sure that 80% of your time is focused on the four or five things that are going to really move the business forward, and making sure you're not just answering emails and doing BS. You're really focused on the things that are most important.
Yeah, I love that. And like on that note, like how do you build, because it sounds like you've built a really strong team, like especially your initial founding team, like how did you build and grow the team? Because I know that's a big hurdle that a lot of brand owners have to get over, especially in the beginning, because you know, the brand's their baby, they don't want to let go. Like one thing that can make that easier is you just hire really great people. Like what's your process for, you know, finding people, hiring great people, and then like getting them up to speed?
Well, I think the founding people were a little different than how we go, but you know, it started off with, you know, Carter and Sean and Brennan, they really proved it that they were the right guys through like a year of free work. They believed in the vision. They said, hey, I want to be your top guy. So I'm going to prove it now. I don't have money necessarily to give you, but I can give you my time. So they really proved it through their time. And I always, you know, especially when businesses are starting and they don't have funding, you know, there's always a level of sacrifice, whether financially or, you know, all people really have are time or money. So if you don't have money and you're a young guy and you want to be in a startup, find another guy that's starting a business and just give him your time and work for him for free. And, you know, you can 3 years later be like the CMO at a business and just be making a ton of money. So everything takes sacrifices to kind of get ahead. So that's how we found our founding team, and they really proved it over the course of, you know, years. And then, you know, how we bring people in now is we just really realize that I call it a gas rating, a give a shit rating. When I interview someone, it's like, you know, by the time the person gets to me and I interview them, my team's already said, hey, this person they have the skills that we need. And then the only thing I'm really looking for is, do they give a shit? Like, are they going to be up late? Are they going to be in the morning? Are they a brand fit? Is their gas rating high? You know, if their gas rating is not high, even if they have a great skill set, then they're usually not the right person.
Nice. And how do you gauge that? Do you just kind of like feel it out?
Little things like, you know, if we interview them and then we don't reach out to them a week later, have they sent me, like the littlest things can really make a big difference.
Right.
Are you following up with a thank you email? Did you send maybe a card saying, hey, thank you for your time? Like things that, you know, take 2 seconds of just really thinking about, really showing that you want it. Following up with me on a phone call. Hey, Steven, I haven't heard from the job. Those are some basic ones. From their past history, does their actions speak that they are like, you know, truly are into like their craft? And they didn't necessarily need to be into t-shirts or fashion, but they're into like following up on their Twitter, like the Twitter followers. Like if you're a development person, are you up to trend on understanding what the best new practices are? Or like if we brought in a head of retention, are you understanding, you know, what's your resources? Like some of the questions that I would ask is like, what's your resources to like understanding and up on the newest trends? And what, like their answer to that would help me understand their gas rating. If they're making stuff up on the fly and just saying, you know, like, it truly is a great question, because, you know, we Chance, he was our fifth employee, and he was a young kid. He was right out of college, and he wrote me this letter and said, hey, I don't have that much skills, but I'm willing to learn. And he really has taught himself how to be like a best in class digital acquisition manager through just giving a shit and finding resources, reaching out to people, trying to learn. And that's the skill set I really look for, is like, you know, because we can't hire the best, even to this day. We can't hire the guy that's worked at Allbirds for 5 years and is the best DDC. We have to learn this on the fly. So having someone, that willingness to learn aspect, is like part of the gas rating.
Right. Yeah, I love that. And I love that the acronym GAS in gas rating. Because that's it. It's almost like saying, like, you know, do they have it? It's like, what's it? I don't know how to say it, but like you can tell if someone has it usually. Yeah, that's awesome. How often, like, how do you know when to hire as you grow too? Because you seem like you're really good at delegating too, because you did it since day one. Like, how are you thinking about that?
You know, this is always a challenge. It's not always easy to understand, you know, when the right time to hire is. I think we've done it early, we've done it late. Yeah, it's usually when, you know, so there's two, when it's a revenue generating hire, like a Facebook ad buyer or a wholesale person or something like that, you know, it's usually best when on those roles, you can take it more of a chance because if they're not generating revenue, it's pretty easy. But on like the support roles, usually when the people they're currently managing it are like, hey man, like I really need help. We try not to overhire, and I would say, you know, this is still something we're trying to work on and there's no perfect answer.
Well, I appreciate the honesty. I think it's something, you know, every brand struggles with, especially as they're growing. Because it's like to get to the level you're at and to double the business, you're in a unique spot because you have to spend, you know, the ad spend of a business that's double the size of yours. You need to acquire the inventory of a business that's double the size of yours while you're half the size, and then figure out, you know, the hiring and all that stuff along the way. It's like, I mean, it's crazy stuff. Like, what do you guys do, like, on that side of the business, finance-wise? I don't know how deep into detail you want to get into that, or we can totally skip over it. But, like, how do you think about that? Because it's, like, on one hand, like, for example, like, you know, thinking about Q4, you know, coming up, like, a lot of people are gearing up, or you mentioned, like, brands that didn't have inventory. It sounds like you guys are usually pretty well-stocked, and then also, at the same time, aggressive in your marketing. So how do you think about that? And you also haven't raised money, right?
Nope. Yeah. Well, we did an early friends and family that was, like, you know...
Right, in the Kickstarter.
Yeah, but nothing like, we've never raised millions of dollars and all that.
Got it. So yeah, how do you think about that? Like, you're just throwing the money back into the business? Do you have any partners you use or?
Yeah, I mean, Shopify Capital has been great for us where they've literally, like, in your Shopify account, if you have sales, like, they'll give you money to buy inventory and it'll be like cash that day. And so we started with $2,000 and we paid that back in a couple of days, and then 4,000, and now it's like up to $1 million. And you know, it's not debt either, it's a remnant, so they just take a portion out of your sales. It is at a premium, it is pretty expensive to do, but it's really quick and easy. I'm trying to think, like, yeah, I mean, financing, Carter is the, you know, more director of finance, and he's more of the leader there. But I would say, you know, partnering with someone that knows, like, lines of credit. And early days, we used 0% APR credit cards and then never had to pay interest and leveraged, you know, 20K at a time. You know, with e-commerce, there's so many great lending partners out there. If you have sales, like, you have every single day, I get a new type of DDC credit card that people want to use because, you know, direct-to-consumer businesses, it's very easy to lend against because all the facts are there. You know, everything, every action by every consumer is always tracked.
Right.
So low risk if you have sales. Now, if you don't have sales, none of that becomes an option. But if you're a growing business and you have month over month sales and you're growing and you just need inventory, you'll be able to get that in 2020.
Yeah, that's huge. Well, that's cool. It's just always interesting to hear about. That's actually something I've never really, you know, jumped into on the podcast, but I was thinking in the back of my head, like, I know, like, you know, it's like growing so fast, just all these things to balance. I was just curious, but yeah, that's super cool. And I mean, having a partner who knows that even better than you, right? Like, that's the way to do it. And yeah, like to kind of like, you know, round things out here, like, what are you thinking about in terms of, you know, just trends in general? Like, what are you thinking about? I guess there's two places we go. Like, in general, you know, Q4 is coming in, a lot of predictions on that. Like, how are you preparing? How is Cuts preparing? And like, what are you guys thinking about in terms of Q4?
Yeah, this Q4 is going to be, you know, one of the ones that we tell our kids about one day. I think it's very.
I love it.
this one's very volatile because of the election. With all the ad money that's going to be spent in early November, or I'm sorry, late October, I mean, it could make it very difficult in October to spend money because it's going to be at a, you know, it's just going to, there's going to be a lot of money in the marketplace. On the flip side, with all the stores closed and everyone, that's like peak shopping season, the CPMs, which is like cost per thousand, might be higher than they've ever been by a long shot. So it could offset that and then create this like buying explosion online, which would be really good for us. So there's a lot of different scenarios that could play out. One is being, and then two, and then I would say the because of the increased mail-in ballots, there's like shipping is going to be hugely delayed. So if you're listening and you want a special item, don't wait till Black Friday. Everyone's throwing their Black Friday sale starting November 1st. So I would buy early November if you don't want to have a huge wait. If you buy early October or like on Black Friday or Cyber Monday, the delays could be weeks. So don't wait till then to buy. I know like several outlets are saying, hey, we're running our Black Friday sale through the end of the year. I think shipping is going to be really an interesting, I think it's going to be a shit show, to be honest, where you have, and in everyone in the U.S. potentially, or, you know, a fourth of the population mailing in votes, that just puts a demand on the shipping places. And then two, the explosion of e-commerce drove up demand where it took 5 years of growth and put it into 6 months. And there's just not bandwidth and infrastructure and people hired to handle it. So it's just going to be interesting to play out. But, you know, I'm always optimistic. I think if you have a great brand at the end of the day, people will buy your brand and it doesn't really matter the market conditions because your brand is in the market. Your brand is your brand. So if you have a great brand, people will buy. And that's kind of our mindset towards.
Yeah, that's awesome. And like, what are you guys thinking about in terms of like Cuts Clothing? Like, where are you headed? So you mentioned like you're focused on doing one thing really well. Like any plans to expand product lines or like, what are you thinking into 2021? Any sneak peeks into the vision for the next year to come?
Our product category is one we're defining as everything for the sport of business. And so, you know, we want to come up with like jogger pants that aren't quite joggers. Like you would go to the gym, but a little bit more like slender, but still comfortable.
Nice.
These bomber jackets. But you know, all those, some of those items could be 2 years away. This year was the year of adding one item, which is sweatshirts. So we're just going to stay there. And then once we conquer that, you know, go on to the next thing. So, you know, I think we have a lot of some really, really cool brand plays coming up with some big time athletes, some of the biggest in the game. So we're really excited to show everyone.
Yeah, that's awesome. We'll have to keep an eye out for that. Man, it's been really good to have you on. Like as we start to wrap up here, any other words of advice or just like thoughts that you want to end on?
One thing at a time. I know it sounds so crazy, but you know, if you look at some of the best brands in the world, Amazon, like MeUndies, some other big, you know, consumer items, you know, they've done one thing really great, and that's ultimately like how you get to success is really focus on one thing and make it be known for that and then move on to the next.
I love it. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Well, ooh, I like that. I might steal
it. Go ahead. I stole it. Maybe don't actually eat elephants, but it's a good good phrase. Well, hey, man, it's been awesome having you on the show. Where can we go to learn more about you and Cuts?
Yeah, my Instagram is at Stephen Brilli, but if you want to just check us out on Instagram, it's at Cuts, C-U-T-S.
Oh, nice.
Or cutsclothing.com. And yeah, check us out. And, you know, we got some amazing new products coming out. You know, we have a new product coming out every Friday, which is part of our Friday Projects line. And it's usually more of our trendy items, but feel free to find me, reach out to me. Happy to answer questions when I have time.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Stephen. We'll get that all linked up down in the show notes below and really appreciate you taking the time.
Awesome. Thanks, Dylan.
Now, listener, before I sign off, stop me if this sounds familiar. Your email marketing is stuck. You feel like you could be doing email better. You're not generating enough email revenue, and you feel like you're leaving money on the table. But you don't have the time to figure email out yourself or do it on your own because you have a business to run. Imagine this. Imagine not having to worry about leaving money on the table with your email marketing. Imagine not having to figure out what to send, when to send it, how many emails should look, what automation you need, what segments you need, how often you should be contacting your email list, or just worrying about sending the next email. You don't have to worry about any of that. Imagine having peace of mind knowing that your email marketing is generating sales in good hands. At Wavebreak, we help Shopify stores maximize their email marketing revenue. That's it. We don't do anything else. And we've created a system called the Wavebreak method that, number one, makes you less dependent on Facebook or other marketing channels. So let's say something bad happens. Facebook says, see you later, Shopify store, and they just completely kill your ad traffic overnight. You don't have to worry. You don't have to stress because you're good to go because you have a cushion of email revenue. You don't have to worry about how or what your wife is going to do or if you're going to be able to make rent or if you're going to be able to pay people because you have this cushion of email revenue to rely on. Number two, the second thing this does is huge. And it's how stores scale from 7 figures to 8 figures to 9 figures. And the secret is repeat purchases. The Wavebreak method gets rid of one-time buyers and increases repeat orders. Number three, it keeps your email list engaged. You don't have to worry about Black Friday and beyond. We'll figure out the ideal amount of times that your list needs to be contacted to maximize revenue, and then we'll execute it for you. If you want to learn more about this system and how we can work together to apply it to your business, go to wavebreak.co to schedule a call with me. And I'll personally send you my calendar link and we can chat one-on-one. Now, I don't have unlimited time to do these calls. I can only do a couple of them per week. So if you want to get your call, go sign up at wavebreak.co for it as soon as possible and we can talk about how we can work together. Thanks for listening to this episode. Subscribe to the show on iTunes to get notified of new episodes as soon as they drop.